Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-host.
Mega Bears fan.
Talco.
Semper Fi.
So I'm going to assume then that my microphone is working and the volume's okay?
No, I'm just talking to myself.
Sweet.
Well, welcome to episode 223. I am Semper Fi, something something witty. And today I am joined by Trevor.
Your mom.
Jason.
Something something witty was supposed to be my line, damn it.
Mackie. Yes.
Do I have to force feed all of you caffeine?
Yes. Maybe.
Apparently probably. So.
The Mian Team self-introduces, and he will trade his units for your cities. There we go.
Show without Dan.
It's just not the same.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
I'm replacing Mad Jin.
Good luck.
I don't know if I can fill those shoes.
Oh, you could try to replace Dan.
Oh, I'm replacing Dan. Oh, geez.
I don't know.
Trevor thought he had the hard stick.
Try replacing Mackie.
Huh.
Good luck becoming the only woman on the internet.
Yeah, that's going to be a little awkward.
Yeah.
Hey, I just noticed the guest co-hosts outnumber the regular co-hosts.
Yeah, I think this is one of those situations where there might be an uprising. It could be a problem.
It's okay, there's no coup coming.
Technical difficulties.
I'll show you technical difficulties.
Something, something, your mom.
Oh, now Mackie's being Mad Jin. Okay.
Well, she's not here.
That's true.
As long as I don't have to be Mad Jin. I mean,
I'd rather try to be Mad Jin than Mackie, honestly.
What's so difficult about being me?
I can't do your voice.
And I can't.
Oh.
And I don't think I can tune it as effectively with, like, audio stuff either. I don't think I could sound like Mad Jin either, but it would probably come out closer than trying to sound like you. That would be my guess.
Back from episode 218. Elkinar had just listened to this episode. He wanted to point out the things that we were taking a little too literally, but also that the errant signal guy is not doing his communication to his audience well. One line about it's possible to bring academic criticism into gaming.
I've actually posted on several occasions on, I think, 2K forums, the idea of moving away from the singular victory conditions and having something kind of more like Settlers of Catan's victory point thing, where you get points for certain accomplishments, and then at the end of the game, whoever has the most points wins, or the first person to get to a certain number of points wins. I mean, that's going to be difficult to work in context of Civ, because most people are used to thinking of the score system of Civ as being very broken and not actually representative of game progress, but would just award points for things like being at the top of particular demographics, and those points would fluctuate over the course of the game. Winning the space race wouldn't be a victory. It would be a thing that gives you a large number of victory points. The developers could actually find a way to make it actually representative of having a strong civilization in general, rather than just having a strong civilization in this one little aspect.
It's definitely an intriguing idea. Of course, you have your players who just want to go knock heads. So,
yeah. I think the lack of
everything.
I've thought since Civilization V released that the lack of any kind of cooperative victories was a real shame. I mean, I don't exactly want the exact same permanent alliance system from Civ IV, but at least that added some extra weight to diplomacy, where you could actually have friends and alliances that literally stood the test of time, which is, you know, the whole point of the game. And you could end the game with alliances intact and winning with your allies. And I think that's just one of the things that Civ V unfortunately lacks. And it does create that sense of everything being a zero-sum game, where even if I'm helping you, I'm only doing it for my end goals. And you end up in these situations where you might have a friend or ally who gets in trouble and he's being invaded and conquered. And you just kind of sit back and don't do anything about it because, well, now that's just one less player to compete with.
I like the whole idea of like a point system where you get points for going to space, for having good demographics and all, but I'm just kind of concerned that it would extend the length of most average games beyond just the regular amount that they are now. I think most of us already spend a lot of time playing Civ into midnight and 5 a.m. I don't really want to be playing it into next month.
Yeah. You could probably have an adjustable point thing where in the game configuration screen, you set how many victory points it takes to win, and then that would adjust how long the game goes, which would be right there along with the game speed.
Everything from the number of attacks to the attack costs to unit movement rate to unit healing rate, any number of factors could be used to guide that. I would like to see the score be a little bit better representative of your position anyway, and not like for a victory point score, but just so that it's more useful than just like a pop and tech counter, basically. Because you can look those things up in the demographics anyway. No, that's not new to Civ 5. All the Civs have really had an issue with that.
The Sims, which has that goal and aspiration system, that's another approach that Civ designers could take to future games, is instead of having a preset victory condition, give each civilization sets of goals and aspirations that they want to achieve over the course of the game. And accomplishing those would give you points. And then these goals could change from game to game, which would add replayability and make it so that you're not just following the same rote steps every game.
Now, do you let the Civs choose that? Or can you pick that at the start and then pick your Civ regardless?
You could probably have the option to randomize it as well. But yeah, it could be something that's actually based on the Civ's personality. Like Rome could have certain goals, like building significantly complex road network. And Egypt could have the goal of building enough wonders. And so that would be like maybe an extra part of their unique national character.
Ooh, and you get victory points for that. That would be really nice, actually.
Yeah, but then you could also have maybe just some randomly thrown in generic goals, like having the highest literacy rate, not having any cities that are starving, or having a surplus of food, doing things that are good for the people in your civilization and not just for the nationalistic state goals. It's definitely something that designers for Civilization VI and beyond could definitely look at, is trying to make the game more representative of developing a civilization rather than developing a nation state that just wants to win a space race.
I think that's a valid point.
Yeah. It would be interesting to see at least some of it, for sure. But depending what they can get in from an engine standpoint, I always got to balance that. Feedback from episode 222 here from Gaga Extreme, Guten Tag. I noticed, quoted on Polycast, and this joined the ranks of famous people. I wanted to port here to collect my internet money. Oh, Gaga, I will give you half of my raise from the last season in response to your...
I was going
to
say we don't have internet money, but we have internet cookies.
I have funny money. Some funny money.
Well, you got a leg up on me.
One thing about the wonder discussion makes me wonder, LOL. Ha, I'm changing your language. It is now pun intended. What is the usual BE playstyle for the Polycast members? I just kill everything. But that's just me, because ever since I switched my strategy from mass terrorscaping to academy span, I often just wind up building a single wonder throughout the game. The affinity wonder needed to win. Main reason being the win timer. Usually finishes around turn 225. It's just a short time frame. Most wonders seem to have either too much of an opportunity cost early or lack time to have enough impact on the game. It would be interesting to discuss how the victory conditions work out in practice in one of the upcoming episodes. Not just what you have to do, but also how you get there. I think this is one of the biggest bugbears of BE at the moment. Yeah. Well, I don't know about you guys, but I usually just build units and take all the cities.
That's probably even faster than trying to get to the affinity wins.
Yeah, honestly, like, I haven't played the game a whole ton, but I've played it a solid amount. I always wind up leaning into that, because I always prefer playing that way anyways. I just go kill stuff all the time. I'm probably not a good litmus test here.
Well, the easiest way is beeline affinity text, so you get a superior unit and then go smash things.
Yeah, well, span trade routes, beeline affinity texts, and yeah, pretty much just crush things.
My strategy mostly has been not playing much. I've been playing Civ 5 still. I don't even remember what all the victory conditions in BE were, because the only one that I've ever actually achieved was the one where you teleport all the humans from Earth and settle them, which was cool because it took a long time to do, but I don't remember the rest of them.
The victory conditions are domination, conquer all the capitals of every other faction, contact, discover clues left by all the ancient aliens that used to be on the planet and find the signal and decode it. That's part of a quest line that rarely comes, but when it does, it's pretty cool. Promised land victory, it's the affinity victory for purity. You research orbital networks and build a laser comm satellite to reestablish communication with Earth. I think that comes at purity level 13. Then you have to build the Exodius Gate and bring in 20 colonists from Earth and settle them around the planet. The Transcendence Victory, which is for harmony, to awaken the planet's sentient superorganism and mind meld with it. achieved at Harmony level 13, you have to build the Mind Flower plant and protect it for a certain number of turns until you can connect with it with Mind Stem buildings. And then there's my personal favorite, because it's Terminator Victory, Emancipation. Like Purity, you have to build the Lasercom satellite, establish communication with Earth, and once you get to level 13 Supremacy, you build the Emancipation Gate. Instead of taking people from Earth, you go into Earth with your units and, quote-unquote, liberate it with at least 1,000 combat strength.
It is pretty funny if you are sending the Terminator-looking kind of units to do that.
And just for reference, the descriptions come from Well of Souls. I admit I haven't played a lot of Beyond Earth recently, more of a Civ 5 type person, but in the hours that I have played, I've definitely preferred building a giant robot army and annihilating Earth.
Fair enough.
It depends on who I play with. Like, I play Hot Seat a lot with my wife, and I tend to not try to do the kill everything, because that would require me to stomp my wife's armies, and that's usually a bad... If I were to sleep in the same bed...
Clarification, yeah. Stomp the other non-human players.
Yeah.
If we do that, it's usually we're on the same team, or, you know, we get right up to the end, and it's like, all right, and then just evacuate the capital, and we'll just end it this way. Or we declare it done at that point, we don't actually finish off the capitals. But if I'm playing by myself, it really depends on how I feel. But I've kind of usually just stick to the domination, because all the affinity victories really do feel kind of just end turn, end turn, end turn. Especially the purity and the harmony victories, because it's just kind of like you sit and wait. And then there's really nothing to do in between other than just kind of mill around. You don't even have to defend it, really.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I noticed with the one where you have to resettle the colonists, is I just kept doing it. I mean, I was on a fairly medium level difficulty, so I don't know, maybe it changes on the harder difficulties, but I kept expecting everyone to declare war on me and start destroying all my little settlements that I made, and it just never happened. That whole end of the game was just end turn, beam in, new settler, end turn, beam in, new settler, end turn. So, yeah, I'm not sure if the AI was even aware that I was in the process of winning the game.
The same thing happened to me when I was doing the Supremacy Victory. I was just sending in all those robot units to liberate Earth, and I was expecting at least the Purity players would have at least some kind of objection to that. They want to save humanity, they want to preserve it and bring it to the new planet. I thought they'd say, oh, you're looking to liberate humanity and make them all robots? Not on my watch. But they just kind of sat back and took it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely, like you said, there should be some acknowledgement that you are directly contradicting their endgame objectives.
I do think that all the Civ games could benefit from nations making a real effort to stop each other winning to some degree. You know, if we're going to have the victory condition model, I think that's something that AI should be cognizant of, because this has been a problem really since forever.
Just as long as it doesn't necessitate friends and allies backstabbing you, which is why I'm always advocating for shared victories.
Yeah, that's true.
Because at least nice to be able to rely on your BFF since 4000 BC to watch your back when you're about to win.
A betrayal.
Yeah.
And that way, when you play with your wife, you can not ever, like, attack you.
I've gone through all of them at least once. But really, building good units and then going and smashing faces is still easier. I mean, I like the idea behind all the other victories for the amount of time you have to spend on them. Because literally at one point, I was sitting there and just like, end turn, wait for this build, end turn. Gotta wait till I can send another one, gotta wait till I can send another one, end turn. You know, no.
Yeah, I understand that. I mean, I used to complain really big about the turn timers just for that reason. And then that's the way the turn base is gone for between turn times. But you know it's an interesting day when you say the same thing I say, though. Oof. What's the world coming to, Mackie?
I don't know. I was going to try and think of a solution to make me not have the same thing, but I'm like,
Well, obviously, because you have an opinion that agrees with my opinion, you're right anyway, so you don't have to worry about it. Gaga Extreme also asked how we get there. How do we get to the victories? I mean, it's slightly more involved, but not much in my case, because I try to optimize expansion and trade routes, and you get so much production from that even now that you just stomp on everything. There's not a lot to say there. I mean, yeah, okay, you want to try and make sure you don't overbuild or underbuild workers. You want to make sure your cities are going decently and that you're not going to, like, super negative on health too early or something like that. But it really is just an expansion optimization problem for me. And then you build the stuff that's most useful to you on a city-to-city basis. Yeah, set up a nice food city and trade that around. Same thing with hammers.
I think that's the problem, too, in the long term, there's really no incentive to deviate from the tech tree other than pick up all of your affinities and maybe something else here and there that's convenient. Otherwise, you just go straight for your victory condition, where in Civ 5 you kind of had to pick up everything, you know, or at least focus one half of the tree. This one, it's kind of, you really don't have to focus much on anything other than what you want, and then that's it, you're done.
Yeah, and then once you've got the techs that you need for your particular victory condition, you just kind of meander around the tech web, and you don't really care, because none of the other stuff that you're researching is at all useful to you. At least that was my experience.
Well, also, when you're further enough down the tech tree with your affinities, you usually have some of your unique units and some of your super units. And at that point, if you're doing a domination victory, everything else is irrelevant because you're walking around with titans.
Yeah, but it's also just that none of the buildings or powers are really all that worthwhile anyway. And once I've got all my premacy points to the max, I don't care about going around the tech web and leveling up my harmony purity points generally. So it's just, it's all the rest of that tech feels like it's not worth anything, which is a shame because you put all that early game investment into research and then you finish your research objectives so early. And then it's like, okay, well, now I've got all these academies and research buildings and stuff that are just like kind of useless now.
It's a comic by Star of Hope. Things can go wrong the other way. I can think of other games where you're ahead. There's a penalty to your relationships with AI every turn, and everyone will always end up declaring war on you no matter what you do or how little threat they pose to you. That's true. I'm trying to think of the games offhand. I know the Warlord series did this, but no one else here has probably played it.
Total War Shogun 2 had that annoying problem, at least up until the expansions, where you get to the point where you're about to win the game and everybody declares war on you because they want to be Shogun 2.
And I can kind of think of it in like terms of some game modes in other games, like where you have to hold on to an objective, but it's a free-for-all. That way, if one person has the objective for a long time and they're raking up a lot of points, then everyone is going to gang up on them to make sure they don't win as a parallel to another game.
Yeah, I know Europa Universalis usually has the ability to become the Holy Roman Emperor. I haven't actually played the game much, but I guess that gives you a lot of power. So that would be a kind of comparable thing. So you get elected.
That's game over.
Oh, is that game over?
It isn't officially, but if you revoke the privilege in EU4, the rest of the world can declare on you simultaneously and you'd win, pretty much. I wouldn't use that as an example of this. I'm thinking of like, this guy is winning, let's dogpile him mechanic. And that can be fun because in a lot of these games, in the Civ series too, at some point you're a runaway. If you don't get dogpiled, you're not going to lose. There's no way any longer.
Well, unless there's mechanics in place that actually punish your success, you know, some kind of...
That's true, but punishing success when punishing players for doing the object of the game is rough, too. So
it depends
on
how the game's...
I'm not saying the dogpile mechanic is the only answer, but it can work well if it's not too abrasive and it doesn't fire off ridiculously early or late.
Well, it depends on the mechanic. I mean, after all, the happiness mechanic in Civ 4 and Civ 5 is designed to do just that. It punishes you for building too many cities or growing your population too high, both of which are points of the game. So it just depends on how it's designed. So you could have penalties, mechanics in place where if you become too big, your economy crashes because you have no one to trade with and things like that.
But then you're too big to fail.
Yeah. Well, then you just pass that resolution in the UN and you win the game.
Well, there is the issue of, are these constraints fun, too? Part of the reason that maintenance in Civ 4 worked well, that happiness in Civ 5 works pretty well, is that it's something you have to plan against. You have offsets to it, and if you play well, especially if you play much better than others, you can really get out in front as a result of doing so.
Right.
And there's a lot of strategy to apply there. Whereas something like, oh, nope, you're at half size, so we're just going to take away all your money now, is...
Right. So a mechanic like that would have to be something that's progressive over the course of the game that you are able to plan and adapt to. And I'm not necessarily saying that that's the solution, but just that that's something that can be looked at as a runaway controlling mechanic.
It would help. I think like a marginal utility concept in any 4X game would be a really strong thing to have. The bigger you are, the less an additional city is useful. It's not to the point where it screws you over, but it gets to the point where the power differential between like a nation with 200 versus 400 cities would be minimal, whereas the power difference between like 5 and 15 would be huge.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about that like perfect tuning, but that concept and application. That way a dog pile is actually still a threat, for example, even if you are larger than both combined, perhaps.
Like, one of the reasons that Civ and Civ 5 in particular has so many runaway and snowballing issues is because a lot of things in the game are just linear progressions.
Yep.
You build a building and it gives you the same effect that every other building gives you, and they just add up and add up and add up, and you found a new city and it just adds up and adds up and adds up. So there aren't very many mechanics in the game aside from happiness that are inverses that cause problems as you grow and expand. Everything just tends to stack on top of one another.
Instead of a tech tree, we had some sort of web-like structure for our technologies.
Well, the other solution is simpler, but it would work. It's just to really limit the amount of time between a runaway nation forming and just the game ending. In other words, there's not a whole lot of time, but once the game stops being contested before, you just win outright.
Which is one of the things that would make having some kind of victory point system useful, is instead of having those victory conditions that don't come into play until the very end of the game, if you are running away very early, you just keep accumulating victory points, and eventually, you know, assuming something catastrophic doesn't happen, you win earlier because you don't even need to get to the modern era because you've already completely cornered the world economy or whatever.
Yeah, I just think some people wouldn't like that because they want to conquer everything. But yeah, maybe you could just do one more turn and do it anyway.
I think a group mechanic would work to help with runaway civs, is where you could actually, even on like a domination victory, is where you grouped with other civs. So if you had one runaway, you all kind of became a coalition to work towards one thing. Like if you went towards a science victory, you could have more than one guy working on a science. Why does it have to be only I can send somebody to space?
So, like, instead of one nation or one civilization winning, it would be something like the European Union wins, or...
I would say something like that, because then you could actually leverage against the big runaways, because the game could recognize, hey, this guy's running away, but not everybody declares war, because you could have people take sides. Well, this guy's been trading with me since 4000 BC. I'm probably not going to go declare war on him, because that would be jarring to a player in the term of that's kind of takes you out of the game. But if it made sense, as all these other guys, they're still kind of neck and neck with each other, and you're a clear threat. Why do they all have to hate each other? Why wouldn't they be like, hey, let's come together, and especially if they're all achieving a peaceful victory, you know, why are they being excluded if somebody else is, say, going around dominating everything?
Right. Using Civ 4's permanent alliance system as an example, maybe you could have a system similar to that, except there's some kind of cost associated with becoming a permanent ally with someone that scales up as the respective civilizations become bigger. Because one of the problems with Civ 4's permanent alliance system is you almost always just had the number one and the number two civ permanent ally, and then you've just got an even bigger runaway, or the number one and the number three or whatever. But having a system in place where there are costs associated with that, so that you're encouraging smaller civilizations to unite and become permanent allies and then grow their coalition over the course of the game. Something like that could maybe work.
One thing I would want, permanent, it's not really something you'd want since they might turn out to be a jerk later on. I think there should be like a way to opt out of the alliance, but it's really tricky and it earns you a lot of negative points.
Oh man, we got a vow breaker here, guys. What do you think?
So a system similar then to like the vassalage system, where if you accomplish certain milestones, the vassalage agreement is broken and you go back to being independent. I'm not saying bring it back as it was. Just as an example, what you're talking about would be less like permanent alliance and more like the vassal system, where certain conditions cause the agreement to end. So one party or the other does something that the other party doesn't like, or does something that establishes themselves as being independent, then the agreement's broken, they go back to being independent civs.
No, I want to do the Civ 4 strat of vassaling a deity nation and then just selling it at cities back, and then just declaring war on people while gifting it warriors and having it up upgrade them with the super cheap bonuses and just rolling everything.
T. Glevenhaver asks if he's the only person who thinks Beyond Earth should have natural wonders. For example, brings up the giant anthill and Olympus Mons and adds various bonuses to those. I think I do miss the natural wonders, because you're on a new planet. I would think that would be half the fun of Beyond Earth, is actually finding some of these cool things to work on, you know, and you're not necessarily, you don't know what to look for. Whereas in Civ 5, you knew, okay, if I wandered around, I'm going to find the Great Barrier Reef. And if I go this way, I might find Mount Fuji. Whereas Beyond Earth, there's so many opportunities for finding something that's alien and then getting to basically exploit those resources in one form or another.
The concept of a giant anthill as the first natural wonder is kind of, I like it. It's strange, but I like it.
Imagine finding it early in the game and settling it and getting like a siege worm or a kraken when everybody else is just using level one stuff. It just makes me want to say, hey, brah, you got some level one ships around my city? Well, guess what? Release the kraken.
Oh, jeez. I don't think you could give it that kind of power.
You'd have to put something on it that scaled it by time. Yeah. X number of turns elapsed, then you can add this unit to the list or something like that.
Ants. Just lots of ants everywhere. Carpet the map. It just keeps spewing forth ants.
Or it would be based on your affinity. Killed.
By ants, do you mean wolf beetles?
Yeah, or it could be based on your affinity level.
That's
or something.
A placeholder. We'll use wolf beetles as a placeholder. I know you like them, Mackie. So.
Ugh, not when they're on my lawn.
If you wanted harmony, you might get a unit or a boatload of science, whereas purity might be farming money off of it.
Some of the other suggestions in the thread also have something like that, where you settle the wonder and you get it into your territory, and then you get sort of a quest decision that basically modifies the wonder or modifies it a bit depending on what you choose and what affinity you get. One of the ones that I really like is the alien holy site, which gives you a few quest decisions.
Sounds like the one that I had proposed, actually at the very end of the list, the primeval nest.
Here it is, the alien holy site. It provides plus four food when you get into your territory, you get a quest decision. The native aliens seem to make a pilgrimage to these caverns, and you have to decide if you want to let them continue. Yes is only if you have harmony, and no is if you have another affinity. If you say yes, as long as you don't construct an ultrasonic fence in the city, you get 5 xenomass and a free alien unit every blah 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 turns. But if you say no, you have to construct an ultrasonic fence and you get a quest decision. Do you want to exploit the cavern for its food, energy, or do you want to explore it? For food, which is the purity decision, it gives you 8 food. For energy, it gives you 4 food and 4 energy, that's the supremacy one. And explore the cavern is harmony, which gives you 4 food and 2 culture.
I definitely like the idea of the natural wonders possibly giving you quest decisions, because the one that I proposed had similar things where you find an ancient alien nest and you get decisions to like excavate it or seal it off to preserve the bodies. And then depending on which choice you make, the aliens might become hostile to you or less hostile to you for a large chunk of time in the game. But I see some of these that are kind of weird. One that's like an antimatter power plant. That's not a natural wonder.
I think you have confused natural wonder with wonder.
Yeah.
I do like these three that give you more of the affinity-based resources. Viraxite cave, a floatstone quarry, and a great xenomass field. Especially those last two, because it has a central hex and some other ones around it.
Yeah.
Has anyone proposed like a 5 or more hammer water tile for a national wonder that just always spawns in the ocean?
A xenobarrier reef?
Yeah, but it has to be in like far enough into the ocean that you can't possibly work it ever. It just shows up there and looks nice.
Gotcha.
Yeah, Xeno Krakatoa.
Has to be there.
I think someone actually suggested something like that. New Atlantis. It's basically a water type wonder where you can settle a city on top of it and get a bunch of upgraded water tiles.
No way. I want one that you just cannot ever use, no matter what you do.
Then in 95% of games, it's still not workable.
Don't worry. They fixed it.
Uh-huh. I definitely think that there's a lot of room in Beyond Earth for natural wonders and really, really, really exotic terrain. Because one of the things that I criticize the game for is that it doesn't feel sci-fi enough and it doesn't feel alien enough. And I think that having these really exotic natural wonders would do a lot to help differentiate the game from, oh, it's just another reskin of Earth. Especially if it has unique gameplay properties like relations to affinity and interactions with the aliens, as opposed to just being tile buffs. That does end up being just like the wonders in Civ 5. Firaxis devs should definitely take a look at some of these.
Ooh, like Midnight. That's cool. A huge open surface petroleum tar pit like the La Brea tar pits, which in the hexes around it has petroleum resources and skeletal siege worm sites to excavate. That's kind of cool.
One of the ones that I found really cool was the warp anomaly, which is basically there are 2 points on each of the map that kind of have like a Thor the Dark World kind of thing, where if you walk into it, it warps you to the other side of the map. And one person suggested that they be invisible at first, so you not know where they are. I think that would spice up gameplay in the late game, make it a bit less stale. And, you know, it's always good to have a wonder that's more than just flat tile yield improvement and more has a special effect like Skull Dorado or the Fountain of Youth or my personal favorite, Mount Kilimanjaro.
So what would happen if you go through the portal but you haven't discovered the other side yet? Does your unit just die?
Well,
or does he discover the other side?
Yeah, it goes to the other side.
I don't know, I think it could be funny if it requires activation so you can't use it. Or if you haven't discovered the other side, your unit just pops out in some random place, possibly right in front of a siege worm.
Oh, you will be missed. Good suggestions.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of things we like,
we're back over to Civ 5 now. I'm not even going to try the username. That's Al. I don't know. Maybe you can tell us.
Now, Calcodem? Looks like that.
Okay. Phil said it. He's asking, are you really in favor of uniques? He says he sees not a single point to uniques. The unique units, I believe, is what's going on here. Wasn't clear at first. And he's going down the list. First, why do you want them? It's like diversity and replayability in favor. And why he wants them, he doesn't like the imbalance. He thinks you would get a lot more civilizations that way. I don't know. They still have to do art assets and all that kind of things for it. I don't know. They'll give you more civilizations. Want you to be able to earn your advantages. And replayability is on both lists here. I don't get that one. But also gameplay choices. I think you want something more like you start a little more generic and then specialize into your civilization as opposed to starting as your civ.
Isn't that what Beyond Earth tried to do?
Yeah.
Yeah, it just sounds to me like he's asking for a different game.
I can't really make sense of a lot of it. It's sort of jumbled up, but it kind of looks like he's saying that by removing uniques, civilizations will be more unique and more replayable, which doesn't really make sense.
Right. I think what he's getting at is you can replay as the same civilization and do different things and unlock different units, and then that one civilization is replayable. But then I think the common counter to that would be, but then the whole game isn't as replayable because you basically just have one civilization that you just customize however you like, and it doesn't matter which one you pick because none of them have anything that's unique to them.
What do you want to do? Start out with civilization group or something? Like a proto-Roman type of thing, but you could also split off into other things from that or something.
Maybe he was thinking something along the lines of making up unique units as you go, perhaps, like with the research. I mean, there's a number of things you could do with it, but I don't see what's necessarily wrong about the unique units, other than that some of them just aren't exciting and unique abilities.
One of the things that I definitely think that I'd like to see in future games is to have the actually pros and cons of using the uniques. Have some uniques that maybe do something special, but they're like weaker overall, but they're really good at doing this one thing. But then leave the default unit available. So a common example would be like taking the old German Landsknecht back when that was a unique unit. It could have been like cheaper and weaker than a regular pikeman, but you could still have the regular pikeman available. So if you needed to just pump out a bunch of cheap units real quick to like defend yourself, you had that unique opportunity. But if you actually needed the stronger pikeman, then you could do that. Another example would be like the Korean, what is it called? Where it's stronger at killing units, but weaker at killing cities. But you should still have access to the regular in case you still want the city siege capability. So you don't end up in the situations where, again, using Korea as example, their caravel replacement can't cross oceans. They are handicapped. So it would be nice for them to be able to build regular caravels, even if you make them like more expensive or something like that.
There's a number of units that have that little bit of a thing where you might want the original as a slingers that you get from the Inca. If you were trying to use those as an early assault or something like you would with normally with archers, but they get attacked, they push back a tile. Oops, I'm out of city range.
Yes, but like I think that adds a little bit of flavor and uniqueness to controlling the nations in the first place. From a replayability standpoint, I don't see what removing unit types would really help with. I really don't. Yeah, okay, some of them could be better. Fine. Then go ahead, make them better. But don't think a global removing of uniques is going to do much for the title.
And in regards to that, Mackie brought up Europa Universalis before. That actually reminds me of something. A friend of mine before gifted me a copy of Crusader Kings, and I just couldn't really get into it the same way that I could a Civ, because none of the factions or Civs felt like the factions or Civs. They just didn't feel unique, much as I was playing as Faction A or Faction B.
some of the things you can do in that are probably not family friendly to discuss on this show, actually. Well, but
especially Crusader Kings.
Well, yeah, crap. I'm thinking of Crusader Kings specifically in saying this, because it's all these games, just CK2, EU4, and Civ 5, Beyond Earth. Civ 5 and Beyond Earth are probably the closest to each other out of those four I just mentioned. But man, like, you're basically a dynasty in CK2 rather than a nation.
On kind of the same train of thought, one of my favorite things about Civilization, and I know a lot of people in the Civilization fan base feel the same way, is I like the historical context and the educational opportunities that Civ provides. I think by taking away the uniques, you don't get that same gameplay feel of what made these civilizations special in history. I mean, sure, you could read the Civilopedia entry, but it's so much more informative to actually be able to experience what made them unique. And if you just have a bunch of just generic things where you just tech up to some unit, then you're not learning about what made that civilization unique. You're just kind of in this amorphous gray zone. You're kind of getting some vague ideas about, oh, there was this historical thing called the Legion, but I don't really understand its context or place in history because I don't know who built it or what they did with it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, man. Thumbs up.
I agree.
Yeah, you take out the uniques, and how would it not be fun to be Spain and you have tercios and conquistadors and, oh, hey, look, here's another continent with some less civilized people. Guess what?
Right. I mean, at that point, you're not picking a civilization. You're just picking a flag, colored flag. What is the point of having the civilizations? At that point, you might as well just have a single customizable civilization like some other games. But that's not civilization. Sid Meier's Civilization has this historical grounding. And I think that if you take away the uniques, you start to lose that.
Although it would be interesting to see a designer. That'd be kind of cool, actually. Like as DLC or something, you just make anything you want.
Oh, that would be so
designer. Well, yeah, but you would have like points to spend and everything would be valued at points. So you could overpower a little bit. You could probably get a good synergy of things going together that maybe they wouldn't have thought of in the base game, but I don't know that you could really OP it.
I saw them a while ago, a chain of mods on the Steam Workshop by this guy named Blue Blue. Basically what he does is takes out all the Civ's uniques and makes them just standard units that you tech up to with any civilization. So if you want to play a game without uniques, you got the workshop.
Right, so there's his proof of concept. The author of this post should play that and see what he thinks about it.
Proors 1337. I'm just going to call him Prozors Leet. We'll just change the name as we feel fit. Great tunnel and great bridge engineering enhancements. Don't let a tile of sea or mountain ruin the progress of an entire civilization. I actually like the design of this opening post. It looks quite nice. You got the formatting, the giant selling point on the first line. Engineer must be capable of building a great infrastructure. Basically proposing a great tunnel and a great bridge, buildable by a great engineer. They have strong tile yields, apparently. They require dynamite for the tunnel and steam power for the bridge. The tunnels would connect two roads, railways between a mountain range or whatever. A military unit can shelter into a tunnel tile, 100% defense against distant attacks. See if that blocks a nuke. Sheltered units remain invisible for enemy units unless they're placed in one of the two entrance tiles. I don't think that's necessary, but it's there. Defense bonus against melee. No exit panic. Yeah. I just like the way that's written. No exit panic. Attacking enemy unit benefits 75% flanking bonus if the other side of the entrance tile is occupied by another allied or own unit.
Well, if you were that unit, you'd panic too.
Well, yeah, sure.
I want to know, would artillery be usable in there or something like that, like a ranged unit? Put a ranged unit in a tunnel, nobody can see it, but you can fire out of it?
Oh, jeez.
I'm generally in favor of the ability to tunnel in general. In fact, I actually had last year started working on a mod to allow workers to enter mountain tiles and build roads on them that would be, quote, tunnels, but I was never able to finish it because of some technical issues. So I'm definitely in favor of something like this being in the game. I don't necessarily know about all the combat stuff, but just the ability to pass through a mountain at some point in the game, I think would be a welcome addition. And as for the bridge thing, I think there's already a pontoon bridge improvement in the Civil War scenario. So
you can mod it.
Yeah. So that should be easy enough to mod into the game because it's already in a scenario.
Yeah, and I think you could do an iterative approach with these kinds of things. And at first, just, I don't even know about using a great engineer, maybe just buying it at a certain point, which was proposed pretty quickly, but then not giving them all these crazy bonuses. You're just buying a way through, basically. I don't like forcing an engineer just to make it. these things aren't on the level of the great wonders of the world in terms of the difficulty to build, especially the technology time frame you're talking about. I think it would be a lot more reasonable just to make them into strategic chokes that the defender has an advantage with if it's in their borders because they're controlling it, and let you make them because it makes getting around maps a little bit less frustrating, especially maps like Archipelago and whatnot. You can connect up some islands with the great bridges and be a little bit less annoyed with the logistics.
I definitely think that this is the kind of thing where it should just be something that a worker builds once you tech up to some point and just not give it all these crazy powers. Because honestly, how often are you going to have a mountain where you're going to want to use any of these combat bonuses, where they're going to be strategically viable enough that you're going to want to waste an engineer to build the thing?
Well, he did propose giving them pretty solid tile yields on top of all this, but even so, I think it's just a little silly. But it wouldn't ruin the game or something to implement it that way. I just think it would be nicer to have the micro-convenience improvements in particular not be reliant on farming an engineer.
Well, and it's definitely one of the things that makes it so that teching up actually feels like you are improving your infrastructure and construction capabilities, because being able to go through impassable terrains and stuff like that eventually in the game gives a feeling of forward progress. But I'm just not sure if I like this particular implementation, because it has all these just, I think, extraneous details.
If they do implement it that way, though, or if they implement something similar like that, I would actually prefer not to have solid tile yield, but sort of have it, like, buff your trade routes. If you have a land trade route going through a great tunnel or a great bridge, it sort of gets a modifier to give a bit more gold or something.
Yeah, the problem with that, though, is that you don't control the paths that trade routes take, and from my experience, they're really bad at following roads. Even if you have a road available, they don't use it unless the target is so far away that they have to use the range extension of the road just to get to it. You'd probably end up with situations where you'd have a mountain next to a city and you want all your trade routes to go through it, but then they all just go around it anyway and you don't get that bonus.
Trade through this safe and secure railroad? Nah, I'll just go through the dark barbarian-infested forest.
Exactly.
Well, exactly, because it's an adventure. Maybe all of our trade caravans are secretly Dungeons & Dragons characters, and they're out looking for caves with dragons and zombies and fat loots.
They probably
should have re-rolled their stats a few times then.
Just a few. But it is kind of weird, though, that you have civilization, that you can launch people into space into a completely different solar system, but you can't get through this mountain tile.
You can't build bridges, but you can go to space.
Yes, because bridges are hard.
It's legit. I mean, you could go to Alpha Centauri without computers and so forth, so it's solid.
All you need to get to the moon is a pocket calculator, so, you know.
Can we also have buildable canals while we're at it?
Yes, please.
But only if you're Venice.
Approved.
Donna Yoshi said maybe they could cost gold to build so you don't spam them everywhere. Like, one canal costs 10,000 gold, maybe causes some events.
Whoa.
It seems a little steep, but it's not a bad idea, of course. You don't want them spammed everywhere. As fun as it
Or instead of making single canal prohibitively expensive, they could have a cost that scales up based on the distance from a coastline.
Or just have a huge maintenance fee, because canals are hard to maintain.
Yeah, and again, maybe the maintenance cost could go up based on how far it is from the coast, so that you are significantly discouraged from building a 20-tile-long canal that crosses the entire continent. Because
if a trade route just happens to randomly path through a canal, maybe it could get a little bonus.
Do the same thing with the Great Bridge and bridge my way across to the other continent?
Or just tunnel your way through a giant mountain range?
Exactly. If you're playing on an Earth map, the Himalayas are huge.
While we're doing that, we may as well just dig straight down and dig a hole to China.
That is an interesting proposal for a canal. Now we just need the whole game to be mapped to a sphere so we can go from one point to the opposite point in-game.
So is that technically a warp gate of sorts?
Stargate.
I don't know, Mackie. Any time I hear the phrase dig straight down, I just get a little excited.
Just
I don't know why that is.
Minecraft.
Just don't dig into the lava.
The next topic is actually a blog post that I had written. It's about some ideas and concepts for Civilization Uniques in a future, hopefully, Civilization VI game. Clearly, going back to the previous topic, I definitely am in favor of civilizations having uniques because I wrote a whole blog about it. The basic ideas are I took a couple of common civs and just came up with different flavors for them. For example, Thimerica, I came up with this concept of a land of opportunity ability where you get increases in population growth or free great people for becoming culturally influential against other civs. And then I did some rebalancing of the musketmen and different concepts that could go into there and different unique units like a tycoon engineer replacement or merchant replacement that could buff trade routes and stuff like that. I also went into Egypt and the idea of giving them a power based more around the Nile River rather than wonder building, because every civilization builds wonders. But the two ones that were the biggest ones that I wanted to talk about were the idea of Greece being kind of an inverse of Venice or Austria, where Venice or Austria remove city-states from the game. So Greece could be a candidate for civilization that could maybe add city-states to the game. So the idea that I proposed was that instead of Greece founding new cities under its own control, it founds new city-states and then gets bonuses for having relationships with those city-states. And then the other one was the idea of actually having legitimately nomadic civilizations in the game that either don't build cities or which can move their cities, which would be good for like the Huns or the Mongolians. But then unfortunately, Attila Total War beat me to the punch. So
I like the Greece one because I can just imagine somebody in the World Congress, it's the last few turns, and they just spam all their settlers to create hundreds of city-states that are all allied towards them to get a bunch of votes.
Thank you for pointing out a huge balance concern with my proposal. I'll have to put some thought into that, I guess.
You can completely rework the diplomatic victory condition, because that always feels like it needs one anyway. So
right. Well, and remember, these ideas are for a future Civilization VI game, not Civilization V. So the idea is, I don't know what the features and mechanics are going to be for Civ VI. So I'm just proposing these kind of vague concepts. I give examples in terms of Civilization V because that's something that everybody's going to be able to understand. But the idea is just have these vague concepts and then maybe other mechanics and stuff like that in Civ VI could be designed around these sorts of considerations.
No, you must give us a carefully detailed breakdown of how this will contribute to your victory point scale, which will also definitely be there.
Right. I have to design Civ VI right here and right now in order to be able to propose any ideas about what's going to be in the game.
Exactly. Now you understand.
Otherwise, you just have no legitimacy, no credibility.
I know. It's a shame. I should just take the post down. It's the idea of Greece founding city-state definitely be something that would be cool and would even be appropriate for Civ V, because like I said, we have Venice and Austria that take city-states away, so it would seem reasonable to have a civilization that could add them back into the game. So obviously, I'm operating under the assumption that city-states will be in Civ VI, and that there might be a civilization like Venice or Austria that can remove them in order for Greece to be the inverse, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the case.
They all seem sound in concept. It's just a question of, like you said, details on what the next game is actually going to be like.
You can't really gauge how good a specific unique or bonus is unless you know how that bonus plays in a game.
Right. Well, for example, one of the things that I went into about the idea of the nomadic civilizations is the possibility of introducing some mechanics into the game along the lines of climate changes and disease or animal migration. So for the civilizations that are nomadic, like the Huns or the Mongolians, they would have an advantage over stationary civilizations because as map conditions change, you know, if an ice age rolls in or there's a drought or a disease or all of their cows or whatever migrate somewhere else, they would actually be able to move their settlements in order to try to maintain optimal conditions, whereas the other civilizations would be stuck where they are and would therefore have to suffer through some period of having less productivity because of changing conditions.
Firaxis, put Mega Bear's fan on the next Civ game.
Sweet. Other ideas were the concept of actually combining Rome and Byzantium into one civilization and actually giving some Byzantine uniques to Rome, so Rome would be able to build like the cataphract. In many ways, they were the same thing. I actually posted a video about the fall of Rome from this YouTube show called Crash Course World History. He talks about how the Byzantines thought of themselves as Romans and they followed the same law and had similar structures to their government and so forth, although there were some religious differences. So he makes the argument that the Roman Empire didn't fall until Byzantium fell in the 15th century.
We should bring back the Holy Roman Empire, Civ.
Well, that's a different case, but
if you want to be really cool about it, like if you're a Byzantine, whereby the Roman Empire sort of has its uniques or bonuses change over time, somewhat like a mini Fall of Rome scenario in its unique ability.
You know, that actually gives me another idea for a general mechanic that could be in Civ 6, whereby if you lose your capital, maybe you actually do convert to another civilization and get a different capital. So if you are playing as Rome and somebody sacks Rome and captures it, you become the Byzantines and get a different capital. So it wouldn't be like this crippling thing, oh, you lost your capital, rage quit the game. Just force you down a different path, but not necessarily be this crippling thing that prevents you from even being able to compete in the game. Move on, expanding from there, which could actually be a cool concept too.
I demand credit for that idea. Give me my internet money.
Yes, exactly. But that would be one way to have more civilizations in the game without actually having to have as many civilizations in the game.
Sedwick on the Civilization Fanatic forums asks, what do you like to name your cities? As a computer engineer, he likes to base his city names off of prefix multipliers that designate data block size, and each successive city is named after a larger one, like Bitnos, Niblon, Bytania. I'm not going to try to pronounce those, but basically what he's asking is, how do you name your cities? For me, what I like to do is just go the full vanity route, just name them completely after me, like Trevoropolis, Trevorport, Trevorville, Port Alcove, Alcovia, Trevoria. Just like seeing my name plastered all over the map gives me so much satisfaction.
I like to make my city names vulgar or offensive or things along those lines, and I usually gauge my success by how strong a reaction I get out of players like Mackie or Dan.
It'd be funny if the game had a notification popping up telling you that another civilization has founded a city and the name of that city, so I could just name my city after all the wonders in the game and make the other players panic thinking I'd built the wonder. So they just get a notification saying, you know, Mega Bears fan has founded the pyramids. And they'd be like, oh crap, I was building that. And then they stop building it.
Welcome
now,
to
something
Ish.
You used to be able to do in Civ 4. I don't know if they brought it back in Civ 5. Probably not. They probably stopped this. But you could find out all the civs in the game by attempting to name your city after capitals of other nations. And if it wouldn't let you do it, you knew it was in the game. That was something you could do, too.
Well, I guess you just start the game as Attila, and then you know what civs aren't in the game.
Well, yeah.
In regards to capitals, another thing I like to do is if I conquer a capital, I like to name it some snarky dig at the civ that I just conquered.
Yes.
Saying,
oh, everybody does that.
Insult to injury. Ba-bam!
Monty's poorhouse.
Well, I keep making a religion called Tao of Cookie lately. So then I end up making the city names different types of cookies. Usually appropriately to whatever's around them.
Your civilization sounds delicious.
Comments of the Twitch page, Fuzzy Fractal says that he likes naming them after geography points in the game. That's another thing I like to do. Like, if I'm playing as, let's say, the Danes, and I settle a city next to Copper, I'll usually name it Copperhagen.
Copperhagen. But, if your hometown was a civ, what would it be like? So everybody's going through their leader, their start bias, what the unique building and units and everything else would be.
For me, I think it would be Civ Mississauga. Leader, Hazel McCallion. Unique ability, My Way. Roads and railroads penalize your movement instead of increasing it and cost twice as much. Unique building, Square One. Replaces the market and you cannot build anything else in the city until you have built a Square One. Unique unit, Mississaugans. Still better than Torontonians.
Ouch.
Wow.
Hey, somebody did Seattle and made the unique building of Starbucks.
I live in Las Vegas, so my civilization's unique power would just be that whenever another civilization builds a wonder of the world, we get a cheaper, less effective version of that wonder.
That's true.
You built the pyramids. I get the Luxor. You built Neuschwanstein. I get Excalibur.
You make more money off of it than they do, for sure.
So do you get a mini Statue of Liberty, too?
Yep, exactly.
Well, considering how closely I live to Disney, I think that that would be a little too obvious for me to go through.
Whenever your civilization is defeated, you just cryogenically freeze it, launch it into space, and it comes back later.
Oh, my goodness.
And lots of culture bonuses, because sure, why not? I'm all about culture when I play.
My hometown is a small farm town, so I guess we'd get like a bonus to agriculture, and it'd permanently be a size one city or something.
Well, apparently after this past week, my hometown has a bonus to attract any freak snowstorms.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Canal in every hex on the continent. There'll just be canals everywhere, and then you will have frigates.
Capital in the middle of the continent? Don't worry, my frigates can still get it.
Exactly.
There's like battleships sailing into like central United States.
And then you can build your canals through the mountains.
Yeah, right underneath the tunnel. That's why the tunnel is there.
Which creates a waterfall natural wonder.
Oh, yeah. It's not much of a logical leap once you're at that point anyway.
All right, well, this is getting out of control, so...
Yep, on we go.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to Polycast episode 223. This is Mega Bears Fan, along with the Mian team.
Your hometown will be my hometown.
Makalua.
Does it come with the cookies?
Talco.
I'll take the cookies.
I think I was a much better Mad Jin than Mad Jin.
And Semper Fi.
I won't conquer your capital. Maybe.
Can just have everyone on the show sound like me. All of us. Be the worst episode ever.
Just record a 5-way conversation with yourself.
I don't think I could do that properly. I'm not sure I'm skillful enough. And even if I were, I don't think that would actually be a desirable outcome, so...
Just do everything in third person.
Trevor agrees with that. Oh, we're live?
I mean, I understand
that... Should we let them go on about football for a while?
Football! Welcome to Footballcast.
Entertain football fans since whenever. Since now.
Football podcast focused on game strategy.
And today I am joined by... Oh, I should have looked, shouldn't I? No,
our names don't matter.
What matters
is why we're here.
Anyone else preferred victory conditions?
I was going to say that.
Go ahead.
I wouldn't mind city-states doing that. I don't think they would ever accomplish much, but it would be amusing.
Well, I remember having a game where one city-state had actually conquered an entire continent of other city-states.
National Wonder Brainstorm. Who wants to bring national wonders into Beyond Earth?
Wait, national? I thought it said natural.
Oh, natural, sorry. I have a mix of things going on in my mind. Yeah, go ahead. Bring us into it.
All right, so forgive me for butchering their name, but Prores brings up that there should be natural wonders such as building a great tunnel through a mountain and great bridges to basically cross large expanses of water.
I think you're looking at the wrong topic.
Am I?
I'm going to link you to the topic that I have down for this.
Oh, you know what?
Because I was reading through it, like, this is...
Oh, I'm looking at the engineering enhancements. Yeah.
Technical difficulties, BRB.
You keep using that thread. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Dan, we're hopeless without you.
Yes.
Yep.
We need you, Dan. We need you.
This totally never happens in other episodes. Not even once.
Yep.
One too many tabs open. This is my great, great failing.
It's your great mistake.
Yes. This is the great mistake. Too many tabs open. Okay.
Well, depending on your computer, it might be a mistake.
Yeah.
This is true.
We have a couple comments in the Twitch thing. Actually, we have a number. Whoa.
I've actually been reading them the entire time.
Oh, awesome. Al, anything you want to highlight?
Why do you have to put all the responsibility on me?
Well, you volunteered yourself. Now I'm voluntelling you.
Oh.
Dan likes voluntelling, so I'm going to voluntell.
And I know I'm missing somebody.
Just a couple of regular co-hosts. Are they a sponsor now? Is that why we're introducing them this way?
Use the reference code Polycast to get a 50% discount.
On what?
We're not talking about Civ anymore, are we?
No, we're not.
No, we've gone into Minecraft.
That's all right, though. We can bring it back.
We'll just edit it out.
Record date, March 7th, 2015. Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips. Copyright Take 2 Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.